morning. You're listening to KUND 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. You can read my columns on the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My guest today is Alan Lichtenstein, general counsel of ACLU of Nevada. He's been in Las Vegas 22 years and with the ACLU since 1997. The Clark County Commission and the state of Nevada keep him a very busy man as an attorney who is trying to secure our constitutional rights. Alan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
In the news lately, Alan, the county says that it wants to, quote, clean up the strip, unquote. This is certainly not the first time the commission has attempted to control what happens on the strip. Let's talk about the history, because I think it's important to set that context. Go back to the 90s when you first started with the ACLU, when it was actually in dispute who actually owned the strip.
Well, that was one of the issues in the 90s. It came about from places like the Venetian, where they tore down one hotel, the Old Sands, and built up a new one and had to put in a new traffic lane and therefore put in a new sidewalk right next to that. Two instances where the county was trying to actually sell the public right-of-way to the casinos for nominal amounts, the purpose being that way there would not be a public forum and First Amendment rights would be curtailed.
And this is something that the Venetian's owner, Sheldon Adelson, had wanted. This worked to everyone's benefit, was the idea at the time.
Well, in terms
of county wouldn't have to maintain the sidewalk, and they were lobbied heavily to...
What happened at the Venetian was the traffic study said that because it was so much bigger than the Sands, it would require a traffic lane as a turnout, and the only way we'd be able to build it would be allowed to build it would be to have that turnout lane. So that was built where the old sidewalk was, the old public right of way, and that they'd have to put a new sidewalk in, which essentially created an easement, even though the property underneath the that sidewalk was Venetian property. When they first opened on opening day, the Culinary Union staged a big demonstration there, and the owner of the Venetian called the police and told them to arrest everybody, and they didn't. So actually the Venetian sued the county and Metro. We at the ACLU intervened because obviously this was going to be a major case as it related to rights of First Amendment free speech on sidewalks. And while the union was representing union interests, we felt that the public interest also needed to be involved. So we were involved in that particular case. And the court, both the district court and the court of appeals, ruled that it is a public forum, a public thoroughfare, just like any other sidewalk. Now, when we're talking about sidewalks, we're talking about the sidewalk that's required in order to walk up and down the street. We're not talking about the interior sidewalks or those that involve ingress or egress into the property. So that was one of the fights we fought.
So even though it was on Venetian property, the sidewalk was declared public right-of-way.
It was declared a public right-of-way with an easement, explicit or implied. It's using the public function test. It functions as a public sidewalk. Therefore, it's going to be considered a public sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And we have, between that case, other cases on the Strip, and cases on Fremont Street, we established that public rights of way require a public forum for free speech activities, whether the powers that be like the content or don't like the content.
Mm-hmm. And tell us why that was important.
Well, if freedom of speech is important, mm-hmm. Not everyone can rent a billboard. Not everyone has a column in the Las Vegas Sun and or access TV programs. So the same principles that apply to street performers and hand builders also were the First Amendment principles that allowed religious people and demonstrators, everything from anti-Yucca Mountain to the Occupy people last spring, to use the public streets and sidewalks for First Amendment purposes as they were intended to be used.
Now take us a little closer to the present when the county has attempted to, the county and Metro have attempted to crack down on handbillers.
Well, the handbiller case came actually in 1997 when the county passed an ordinance that prohibited handbilling. It was poorly written because it prohibited any distribution of any literature that had any commercial content whatsoever. If you look at any newspaper, well, newspaper, if it's successful, is going to be about two-thirds advertising. So newspapers or any church flyer that says, you know, please donate to us or anything like that would have been affected, and it was ruled unconstitutional. They changed the wording a bit and tried again. It was still unconstitutional, and so there are handbillers out there. We've had cases about the street performers. Again, all this started back in the days when the casinos and the county were talking about Las Vegas as a family resort.
Mm-hmm.
That was before the what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas days. We've gone through all those particular periods. We've gone through the boom times and the bust times, but the First Amendment doesn't depend on those things. The First Amendment has to necessarily trump business interests if free speech means anything at all.
So that'll bring us to the present when the county commission is now attempting to quote, clean up the strip. This came after a spate of five homicides on the strip last summer, although there seems to be always an easy justification to hit First Amendment rights. And so they formed a working group made up of strip casino types, and they've come up with some recommendations. You seem to be somewhat concerned about what those recommendations will be.
Well, first of all, let's go back to those five homicides. None of them involved anything to do with free speech activity.
Right.
It was not... people point out that there was a fight sometime last year between somebody dressed as Spider-Man and somebody dressed as Batman. How many other fights have been taking place on the strip? The homicides involved mostly, frankly, drunken tourists. And in terms of safety, if they're really interested in that, then they might want to talk about a dram shop law that would limit the amount of alcohol they ply the tourists with and then send them out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different question. And that's not going to happen, and no one's going to propose that.
No one has proposed cleaning up the inside of the casinos.
Yeah, or the fact that, or the drunkenness that occurs with the bottle clubs and whatever, which is a lot of the problem. And we understand it's a tourist area. As far as what the county has done recently, it's kind of puzzling in a way. For well over a decade, I've been talking to various commissioners, and commissioners will come and go, and I've been doing this so long that some of them are even out of prison now. and they kept asking me, what can we do about the strip and some of the problems? And I've always said to them, there are certain limited things that can be done in terms of time, place, and manner regulation. So if you have particular spots that are bottlenecks, you could probably move people away from there, move people away from crosswalks, driveways, things like that. One thing also is there's this myth that there are only certain spots that handbillers are allowed to stand at. That's not true. They're allowed up and down the sidewalk. But one thing that is required is that the police have to take the side of the First Amendment and follow the law and not just be, I think lackeys is probably the best word, or for the security people, which frankly has been done. We've seen that particular change. Metro is no longer just acting as an auxiliary to the security that helps.
So, but in other words, the private hotel security have obviously they don't want very often they don't want handbillers in front of their property. They think it detracts from the brand. So they have in the past sort of employed Metro to help move them, move those handbillers out.
Not just handbillers, street performers or demonstrators or anybody that they don't want.
And Metro
have there.
Is not willing to go along anymore.
Metro finally has seen the light, read the court cases, lost the court cases that they're involved in, and are now actually doing something that I think was a very good idea, and I commend Sheriff Gillespie for. Several months ago, he asked us at the ACLU if we could facilitate meetings between Metro and the handbill company owners to try to work out some voluntary guidelines so that they could not diminish their speech, but certainly avoid some of the problems such as litter, such as obstruction, and that sort of thing. And we are meeting regularly, and that seems to be starting to work. So there are things that can be done. As far as this $500,000 study goes.
This is the pedestrian study that the Clark County Commission has.
I guess that's what it is. We have not been a part of that. We have not been consulted on that. I was this working group, and the working group is government and the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else was invited to that particular table. I was invited to address them at one point for an hour and told them about the casework. The cases that we had, it was a bit disheartening when I walked in there because the first question that was asked was from everybody, so how do we get rid of the handbillers? And the answer is, you don't. Mm-hmm. People have this idea that free speech means I can say whatever I want to say. Well, that's true. That's only part of free speech because the price we pay is that we have to listen to and be exposed to things that we don't want to see and hear. It's a trade-off, and people are generally only willing to take the part of the trade-off that helps them, not realizing that things
not the annoyance.
Things that annoy them they have to put up with also. So the commission, I mean, after all these meetings, the suggestion of some time, place, and manner restrictions was stated, but that's pretty meaningless also because that's like saying, well, there ought to be some laws. Well, depends on what they are. Certain minor ones, as I put forth before, dispersing handbillers up and down the strip rather than having them congregate in certain areas, dealing with issues such as obstruction or whatever, or you know, particular bottlenecks, I think those can be done. The one thing that hasn't happened, which makes me really dubious about this whole operation, is that time and time again, I have suggested that there be, that the hotels and the county actually sit down with the handbill companies, as Metro has, and work out how to deal with things like litter and how to deal with particular problems, start a dialogue. That hasn't happened. And that leads me to think that they
are
going
to try to use coercion.
They're likely to come up with something else that will be oh so clever but still unconstitutional and will be back in court one more time. One of the things I've always said to the commissioners who have asked me this is if you're really serious about dealing with some of these issues, you're going to have to do something that's politically unpopular. You're actually going to have to write into an ordinance that these people have a right to be out there. And that's going to take some political will that thus far has not existed.
Mm-hmm.
That's still going to be the case. And, I'll be the optimist and say that perhaps they have again, read the series of court cases and finally decided that they're better off actually dealing with some of the secondary problems without trying to control the speech. Either street performers, and we had to go to court on that one, or handbellers, and we've been to court several times on that one. A perfect example is the littering problem. It's not that difficult. The handbill companies and the hotels can get together and work out littering. I mean, I mentioned to the hotels.
What is a potential solution there?
Potential solution is for a hotel. If I were owner of a hotel, I'd hire a couple of people at minimum wage to go out and continually be sweeping up the sidewalk, not just for the handbills, but also the
everything
soft
else.
Drinks
yeah,
and
trash,
that,
right.
And those, you know, half gallon daiquiri glasses that people leave there. When I said that, they were appalled that they should be charged with that expense. These are billion-dollar companies,
yeah.
And the idea of hiring a couple of folks at minimum wage to clean up the sidewalks, that it just doesn't sort of ring true.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the handbill companies also can, and have expressed a willingness to work with them in terms of doing some of that. What I did see in the recommendations, which was a little bit bizarre, was a suggestion that the handbillers be cited for the litter, but they're not the ones who are doing the littering. It's the people who
take a handbill
and throw it on the ground. If you follow that logic, if you find an empty McDonald's giant soda cup on
McDonald's is responsible for the
littering,
then
you go to McDonald's and cite them. That one's not going to work. One other concrete suggestion that they had, which is also a little bit strange, is to prohibit people from standing around on the overpasses. And I'm waiting to see the police come out and arrest a group of tourists standing on one of the overpasses, watching the volcano or the pirate ships or whatever. That ain't going to happen either.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've seen so far is, I like to be optimistic, but what I've seen so far gives me a little reason to be optimistic, and particularly the fact that we've litigated all these cases, yet they still really aren't talking to us at all at the ACLU.
You'll continue to litigate them.
If they pass something unconstitutional, of course we'll litigate them. We've only been doing it for a couple of decades,
uh-huh.
And been successful.
The county, I presume, has, I'm sure they have some turnover, but you must keep seeing these same attorneys in court?
Some of them, and the same attorneys for the hotels.
And they just shrug their shoulders and say, well, this is what the bosses want.
Well, I mean, I can't look into their minds.
Yeah.
I can't read their minds, but I would certainly say that when you have on the record, and with the handbill case, perfect example, they changed a few words, made it actually even, what the judge said was, made it more unconstitutional than the original one.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't go to solve the problem. I mean, that just, maybe it's a political ploy to be able to say,
politically.
Yeah, to say to the public, look, we're trying, we just can't do it, as opposed to really seriously tackling some of the problems. Now, some of the things they're recommending make a certain amount of sense. One of the reasons there is litter is because there aren't enough
trash receptacles.
You see the trash receptacles, they're overflowing
right.
with all sorts of things. So, I mean, some of those things and some of the, you know, beautification kind of stuff, you know, that's fine, and we have no particular issue with that. The question of news racks has also come up. And again, this is another strange circumstance. The county is saying we should put uniform news racks there that could be used from the county. And as you know, there is a lottery system now in terms of who gets it. But the county, back in the days when they're still talking about private sidewalks, made a determination, passed an ordinance that said we're only going to regulate news racks on those sidewalks where the easement is on public land rather than a place like the Venetian. What that means is essentially on those other properties, there is no regulation. And if it is, and it has been numerous times been said that these are like any other sidewalk and you have a right to put a news rack on the sidewalk, ultimately there's no regulation at all. This idea that the hotels can put their regulations on the public sidewalk has been explicitly denied. Mm-hmm. Judge Pro's latest ruling it was December of last year, saying that hotel security has no authority over the public sidewalks. So, again, we seem to be going down the same road.
But what are they trying to do with the news racks?
Well, again, what they were trying to do is say, well, have to allow them in certain places, but this is private property, so we don't have to allow them there. That doesn't work. But if they're only regulating some of them and not regulating other places, I'm not sure the whole question of uniformity makes a great deal of sense.
Okay. Let's shift focus here and talk about Metro Police. The Las Vegas Review-Journal had a investigative series last year which detailed the Metro's
history of
use of force and compared it to other cities. And the ACLU of Nevada has been involved in trying to get the federal government to investigate that history with, I guess I would say, limited success. Tell us what the results of those efforts were and where we are right now.
Well, it's a multi-pronged kind of approach. We have been in contact with Metro talking about these issues for a long time. We've met with the sheriff numerous times to talk about these things. And let's also understand that it doesn't often get in the paper, but Metro does a very good job doing a whole lot of things. We are not anti-police. Mm-hmm. But I think even the sheriff has been on record as saying that when you have the number of police-involved homicides, and homicide simply means a death caused by another person, in a city the size that is disproportionate to what happens in other cities, then it's necessary to look at how things can be made better. So we've been involved with questions of use of force. A couple of weeks ago, we provided Metro with some recommendations concerning changes in the use of force policy.
What were some of those recommendations?
Well, I mean, let me just see where they came from. Most of them came from changes that have been adopted by other police departments in terms of, you know, sort of best practices. And it's really designed, I mean, policies are all well and good if they're enforced, but really they're designed to give the cop who's out there really doing this stuff guidelines as in terms of what to do. Some of them have to do with things that have been adopted and as best practices around the country, such as the standard of when is it appropriate to use deadly force, and even a minor change from whether it can be based on a subjective sense of fear rather than objective sense of what a reasonable person would think would be a threat to one's life or serious bodily injury. It also involves recommendations on how to de-escalate certain situations. If you look at the RJ study and just details in general, certainly there's a problem with insufficient training or policy dealing with people who may be suffering from mental illness or drug or whatever. The Stanley Gibson matter is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm. This is,
I mean, it's an egregious one.
Disabled veteran.
Yeah, this was a disabled veteran who was confused, looking around, and he got into his car and he tried to pull out, but they boxed him in, so it wasn't going anywhere. And he was being non-responsive. And they kept giving him orders, and he was being non-responsive. Wasn't going to go anywhere. He couldn't. And instead of doing what would be logical, since they had his license plate, they could find out who he was, they could hopefully try to get a relative or friend or someone who he might respond to talk to him, they came up with this rather strange idea of shooting out his window with a beanbag rounds and then distracting him so they could rush in and get him. And somehow or other,
apparently one officer was startled by the beanbag
and fired several rounds into the front seat to an unarmed person, and he was killed. Now, the number of mistakes, and I don't think anybody, Metro's staunchest supporter, is going to say that's the way we ought to do things. That's the model. We'll teach them in the academy. So the question is, what things can we learn from these unfortunate incidents to avoid them in the future? And again, using techniques to de-escalate a situation, to not use force unless it is absolutely necessary, and to understand that dealing with people who are unresponsive because of mental conditions or the like, requires different treatment than your average run-of-the-mill criminal who understands things perfectly and is fighting with you. Those are some of the things. Questions of, and I think, again, this came out in the RJ piece, that a lot of the shootings came about through
foot chases.
Exactly that. And so some questionable policies in terms of when those are appropriate and when they're not appropriate.
So you've made recommendations to Metro as to changing some of its policies, and we're in the middle of that conversation.
Well, we are in the middle of the conversation, and the feedback that we've gotten from Metro so far is that they agree with a bunch of them, things that they were thinking about doing anyway in terms of updating themselves, and we'll continue the dialogue. My expectation is that they won't immediately adopt everything that we recommend. Certainly we'll have this kind of dialogue, which is good, which I, again, commend Metro for listening to outside voices.
Mm-hmm. On that note, unfortunately we're out of time. I do want to continue this conversation at some point in the near future. We do need to talk about the Department of Justice. You've been listening to KUNV 91.5. This is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Hooligan. My guest today has been Alan Lichtenstein, General Counsel of ACLU of Nevada. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.